Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
I want to turn now to Shirlene Espinoza. This biography sounds like it's for several lives, but trust me, it's really just for one. Shirlene Espinoza graduated from the United States Air Force Academy in 1987 and was the second woman to fly the U-2 reconnaissance aircraft in the U.S. Air Force. She logged over 200 hours of combat time and was awarded the Air Medal and Aerial Achievement Medal for her service. Currently, she is a captain for United Airlines on the Airbus 320 and 319. Shirlene is a military correspondent for Talk Radio News Service and was an embedded journalist with the U.S. Marine Corps 1st Tank Battalion during the Iraq War. She has also reported from Syria, Gaza, the West Bank, Jerusalem, Jordan, and Kuwait. She won the National Federation of Press Women Award and was a finalist for the New York Festival's Radio Award for her coverage of the war in 2003. And Shirlene is here to talk about her book from Chelsea Green called Through the Eye of the Storm, a book dedicated to rebuilding what Katrina washed away. And so now we've introduced yet another element in your life, which should seem to be full enough. And I guess the first question to ask is this a Katrina book?
Katrina was certainly the catalyst for this book. It's really a book about the human spirit and the triumph of the human spirit. I had been to Iraq as a journalist during the war, as an embedded journalist, and I went back during the Reconstruction. And from that experience, I had a somewhat of a spiritual malaise, I guess you would say. I went back to flying my aircraft for United Airlines, and of course, we've had our dysfunction there as well, but we seem to have gotten through that for now. And I was somewhat stuck and disillusioned, but then Katrina happened, and like so many Americans, I felt compelled to act in some way. I was angry, I was bitter, frustrated with our government, but at the same time felt like it was a moral imperative for me to go down there. And my partner Ellen Ratner, who's here today, she had met a woman on an aircraft who has an aunt and uncle in the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, and there are two African American ministers down in the South. And we asked them if they needed some help, and they said certainly. And so we diverted our vacation and went down a few weeks after the storm. And literally through the eye of the storm, which is the name of the book, through working with these phenomenal, heroic Americans, we're truly the African American church and the faith-based community in general was the center of community, not a source of divisiveness, but really the first and last responder is how I regain my faith, not only in God, but in the dignity and in the human family and the human spirit. And so I was so moved by them and how they had transformed me through their love, just as Jay's What I Believe individual said, the transformative power of love. I wanted to share that, and I also wanted to raise money to build a community center for them. And so I bought a piece of property in Pass Christian, and I've written this story that weaves my life in really with their life. And I hope that, yes, it's a book about Katrina, but just like 9/11, just like the Iraq War and Katrina today, it's an opportunity, I believe, for transformation in this country, healing, reconciliation. And that's really what the true spirit of this book is.
Well, you know, I mentioned with some levity about your life and just the remarkable things that you have done and some things that have happened to you that I'm sure you think about from time to time and find hard to believe. And I think that's what makes the book interesting, is that it is not only a Katrina book. It really is a memoir, whether you want to admit it or not. And you brought up 9/11, and I think kind of the, if you will, the bookend experience is 9/11 to Katrina. something didn't happen to you on 9/11. Can you tell us what that was? And then finally, how that kind of worked its way through in that period of malaise to where you felt compelled to go to Mississippi?
Yes, what Chris is referring to is I was living in New York City. I still am at the time of 9/11, and at the same time, I was a brand new captain based in San Francisco, and I had a trip on the 12th of September in San Francisco. So about a week before I had planned to take Flight 93 on the 11th, it was to go Newark to San Francisco. And last minute, basically a few days before September 11th, the crew desk called me and said, your trip has been changed because you flew too much this week, and so we'll just start you off in Chicago. So I was going to be a passenger on that flight. Not actually the pilot, and I was not on that flight because my trip had been changed. But my classmate from the Air Force Academy, Leroy Homer Jr., was actually the co-pilot on the flight that crashed into Pennsylvania, and this was a moment of. A moment of truth or a moment of a significant emotional event, as they used to call it at Behavioral Science at the Air Force Academy 101, where I just couldn't believe it. First of all, that 9/11 had happened. Here I'd served in the military 13 years so that this would not happen. People would not drop off their children, go to work, and never come home. But I also felt like, why Leroy and why not me? I mean, he was a phenomenal man. Had worked his way up from nothing, really inner city, and we had gone to even the military prep school together, and he had a beautiful wife and a child that I'd just seen him in June, and we used to run on the beach together in California. You know, hear me, I'm not married, I have no relationship in my life at the time, and it wasn't until a year after that, really, that I was at his memorial service, and it's interesting. I don't think I didn't tell this story in the book, but I'll share it with you since you came all this way to listen to our panel. But I was standing there, and they were showing this picture of Leroy and all of the crew members who died, and they had let these doves go at the same time, and I was just in total grief and, you know, really inside of myself, and all of a sudden I looked down, and there was this this dove had landed on me, and it was as though Leroy was saying, you know, Chuck, as he used to call me, easier than Sholene, Chuck, it's okay, you know, go out there, live your life, and you know, make this world better. So I feel like this Katrina book is really an opportunity to do that. And as I've said, that, you know, I've had so many blessings in my life. I mean, I flew these U-2s. I got to fly upside down in instructional jets. I've gotten to go to a war zone. I've lived in Mississippi. But yet the greatest privilege of my life is really to feel part of something bigger than myself. That's what I learned in the military. That's what they've taught me. This small community, African-American community, but yet is open to the whole group, white and black, Latino and Asian. So this is really a narrow miss on 9/11, but by the grace of God, I feel like I can, you know, that I'm glad now that I made it. And as much as I miss Leroy, I feel like I'm here for a purpose.
You know, the book conveys your experiences with Reverend Rosemary from the Mount Zion Church and her husband. And for me, reading it, I was struck by the echoes of biblical experience in Mississippi 2005. I thought that was remarkable. Just explain that in your own terms. I mean, did you feel that too? Did you feel like you were living through some kind of biblical episode?
Since then, I've definitely felt that way. There's a chapter in the book called Amazing Grace, and it describes Reverend Rosemary's sermon, actually. And she describes the exodus of the Jewish people from slavery out of Egypt. Actually, the bishop of the area also gives a sermon around those same lines. And for me, which I don't so much talk about in the book, but since then, it definitely has been as though this project, this opportunity to help this community and write about them has been sort of my emancipation spiritually in terms of my own sense of who I am. But at the same time, as you get out there and you get away from that initial feeling, that initial rush that you're making a difference in it, and you try to raise money for a bunch of poor people in Mississippi, and you try and sell a book for those of you who have done that and promote a book, it is a long ways from home. It's a long ways from the air, which I enjoy. But at the same time, just as Reverend Simmons said, and what I'm reminded of is they say at Mount Zion every day when they have a prayer request is the Lord is able. And, you know, I don't know what exactly, you know, who God is or what God is or how I fit into the universe, but I do know that through this love, this transformative power of love and so much support that we've gotten through this, that yes, the Lord is able, that we are able, as much as I sometimes look back on Egypt longingly and wish that I was just flying my jets like I used to.
Well, you told me that you feel that at this moment in the country, there's this potential, at least, in your own belief, is that there's a shift that will take religious people from a kind of aggressive crusading stance to one that's more helpful, loving, and you quoted some lines from a song that was sung in church when you were a girl.
Yes, it's interesting, the shift that I've seen. I guess I grew up with somewhat of an eclectic religious background, baptized a Catholic, but my mother became a born-again Christian shortly after divorcing my father. And so I sort of went to church 3 or 4 or 5 times a week growing up. And one of the songs that we used to sing all the time was that they shall know we are Christians by our love, they shall know we are Christians by our love. And we were not politicized in any way, yet I've seen, if you read the newspapers, certainly in my copa too, how I grew up and very much counter to what I saw in Mississippi. And not just in the African-American community, but in the tens of thousands of volunteers who still go there today and desperately needed today to rebuild, is this sense of community and love that we're all part of the human family, whether you're whatever race or whatever religion or whatever sexual orientation, you're welcome, that God's grace is sufficient. And I believe, it's interesting, I was running yesterday morning before the conference, and I was running on the mall, and I'd never noticed this about the mall before, but there was President Lincoln, and I realized that he's really at the end of the mall presiding over our nation, presiding over the institutions that can either bind us or divide us, yet he was the unifying force in probably the most perilous moment in our history. And I believe that perhaps, yes, it may seem that we're at that again, that divisiveness, but that the spirit that I experienced in Mississippi and that I see as I travel around the country and people are pouring out their support for this project, I believe in the common goodness of Americans and our sense of hope and possibility and unity over the divisiveness of a political argument, whatever that might be of the particular day.
And if I can, just to conclude our discussion, is to emphasize that the proceeds from the book are to go to construction of a community center in Pass Christian, and that's important to you. It's not the reconstruction of the church there, it's the reconstruction of a community center which clearly would accept anyone, right?
Yes, and it's interesting because when we first talked about this, Reverend Williams had this vision of an educational center. She'd been a teacher for 33 years, graduated high school at 16, certified as a teacher at 19 in 1965 in Mississippi, and she's recently become an ordained minister. And so I bought this piece of property and I had intended to deed it over to the church and then they could build this community center. And she said, you know, let's keep it separate from the church because I want all to be welcome and I don't want any particular denomination to feel like they own this, and this is really for everyone. And so, yes, it's it certainly has the leadership of Reverend Rosemary Williams, but it is definitely a very open and welcoming community down there. And right now, there's nothing, there's no community centers, no place for the fire department, no place for the even Chamber of Commerce to meet. And of course, the kids, fortunately, are just walking distance from this piece of property. We hope to break ground right after hurricane season, and this center we're designing so that it will be a shelter for future storms. But it is on high ground and received very little damage during the storm.
You know, can I ask you to conclude then with reading something from a very early section of your book that sort of touches on passages from the Bible that have inspired you?
Yes, this is from the first chapter called Storms. One morning after another sleepless night, I opened my Bible. I hadn't opened my Bible since returning from the war in Iraq. I still carried it in my suitcase on every trip and kept it next to my bedside at night as though it was a good luck charm, but I had lost its, it had lost its status as my compass for life. I opened it to the following passage. Let us therefore no longer pass judgment on one another, but resolve instead never to put a stumbling block or hindrance in the way of another. Romans 14:13. This passage cooled my anger, but I was still frustrated. I flipped through a few more pages and found the parable of the mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. Matthew 13:31. This parable turned my thoughts toward the tiniest of Katrina's survivors, the children, the mustard seeds, the smallest and most vulnerable. But if we did right by them, we could give them a new opportunity and help them grow to become the leaders and protectors of their communities. Finally, I turned to the words, so the last will be first and the first will be last. Matthew 20:16. Throughout my life, I have found strength in this passage. It carries a message of hope into worlds filled with injustice and suffering.
Thank you very much. And thanks to Jay, Reverend Simmons, and Shalene Espinoza.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.